and welcome to the A440 podcast, the one music podcast everyone can get in tune with. I'm your host, Charles Fiore, and this is the final episode of season one. On today's episode, I have a fantastic conversation with Kevin Seal, a musician based in the Bay Area. He is also a music analyst for Pandora. So we get a little bit of insider information on how Pandora works, how best to utilize their station. And we finally get to put to rest the question of whether or not I will be able to continue to listen to electronic jazz in light of the recent purchase of Pandora by Sirius XM Radio. But I really enjoyed my conversation with Kevin. Thanks so much to him and his band, Citizen 5, for allowing us to use their song Telegraph Blues off of their EP, Pacific Love. That's available anywhere you purchase music. Definitely check it out. There's also an accompanying EP, the Remixtrumentals. Lord, do I have a hard time saying that word. Remixtrumentals EP, in which a couple different DJs remix the Pacific Love EP. Both are great. I've been listening to them pretty much nonstop for the past couple weeks. And yeah, definitely check them out. I just want to say, you know, thank you all for listening to season one. When I first started this project, first of all, I had no idea how difficult it would be just from a technical perspective. Honestly, the interviews and the music aspect of the show has been the fun part. It's been quite difficult technically. Thank you for sticking with me through the ups and downs, just from like a mixing perspective and stuff as I figure out all the tech. I hope that every episode's gotten a little bit better. That was the goal anyway, a little bit easier to listen to. And, you know, I definitely am looking for season two. I'm going to take a little bit of a break. I got to finish this novel I've been working on for a few years now. Got to get that out in the world. Got a couple other things I want to wrap up. But, you know, in a perfect world, I'll have season two drop sometime in the fall, at the very latest, early in winter 2020. So I'm excited. I got a lot of ideas for season two and a lot of leads. So I think I'm going to be able to bring some cool stuff to the table next season. So thank you guys for jumping on board early, hanging out with me over the past 10 episodes. Really appreciate it. All right, that's enough of me. This conversation with Kevin was so much fun. I can't wait to get to it. Enjoy. Out on the town, out on the road for miles. Once again, calling out your name. Out of the rain, out on the motorway. Once again, calling out your name. Telegraph Avenue. So thank you very much for taking the time. I appreciate it. So.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. No, for sure. So do you want to just, should we get down to brass tacks? You want to chat for a little bit? Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Cool. I apologize in advance. I'm coming down with some kind of sinus thing. So my voice is very gravelly right now. So I may have a coughing fit at some point. So I apologize.
Okay. Well, I hope you don't, but the gravelly voice may be good for the presentation.
Yes, exactly. A whole new me.
Right. Okay. A little Tom Waits thing going on.
Yeah, Tom Waits, perfect. Exactly. Late career Leonard Cohen, you know what I mean? It's perfect. It's like that's right in my wheelhouse, actually. Yeah. 6-note range, just get it done by being a stud, you know what I mean? Right. I mean, basically, if you wear a good enough suit, I mean, doesn't that count as the truth? Like, you just get away with it? You
know? The suit goes a long way. The suit covers for a lot.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, a well-tailored suit.
Yeah. Yeah. That's half the battle, you know?
It is. It really is.
So tell me, what's up? How's the music scene in the Bay Area? Like, what's it like? I mean,
it's beautiful. Nice. The music scene is one of the things that drove me to move to the Bay Area in the late 90s. I loved a lot of the music that was coming out of here, The Residents and, you know, Faith No More, and just a lot of the songwriters that were coming up in the Bay Area, I loved. And so when it just sort of worked out for me to move here almost 22 years ago, I was thrilled to dive into the music scene. And, you know, it's become a much more expensive area. So a lot of the artists and musicians have left San Francisco proper and had gone to the outskirts gone to the East Bay and further. Thankfully, for my part, I moved to Oakland when I first got here, so I had always been in the East Bay. And there's, you know, there's still a really thriving local scene, and I find it to be a very supportive scene. I think bands are generally really supportive of each other and really encouraging and really welcoming to new bands. So, yeah, I'm thrilled, and I go out to see local music as much as I possibly can here.
Nice. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that the scene's supportive. You know what I mean? That's fantastic. You know, that's awesome. I mean, people come to see you guys as well, I guess. I mean, is it pretty common to have, like, other musicians in the audience and stuff like that? Or
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Musicians go see each other's bands and right. And stay for the other bands. That's not always the case in all places. But here, I find that people, not only in the other bands, but in the audience, if they're coming to see one band, they're staying for them all. Usually,
nice.
Which is great. So it's open-minded audiences and really fantastic venues. A lot of those venues have been around for a long time.
Yeah,
the Bottom of the Hill in San Francisco, I absolutely love. The Elbow Room, which just moved to Oakland, is great. You know, Cafe du Nord is back up and running. And there are plenty of good places to play, thankfully, and people willing to go out to see music. So.
Do you go see like the kind of music you play usually? Are you kind of all over the place? I mean, are you?
I'm all over the place. I'm going to a show this Saturday night at the Independent in San Francisco, which is Pamela Parker, Sweet Plot, and Michael Ward. Okay. And all of them are pretty different from what I do. They're kind of more soul. Driven rock, I'd say, sort of like more blues rock and like that kind of thing. But they're bands I really like, and I'm excited to see the three of them. And that's a beautiful room too. I love the Independent. I see a lot of jazz, and I see classical music and avant-garde and that kind of stuff, and just a lot of types of music I don't do myself.
Well, that's when I was thinking about you as a musician. I mean, I feel like you've like fronted and backed like a lot of different bands in a kind of a variety of musical styles, you know, over your career. I mean, okay. I don't know, like you, what's the secret to like, I was wondering like where you see Citizen Five slotting into your like musical arc, you know what I mean? Is that like, as your interests have changed and stuff like that? Or is that, you know, like progressed?
I feel like I'm finally doing a band that's in a style of music that I've loved listening to and dancing to for a long time.
Right.
But I've never really done myself. So I feel like I'm kind of getting the confidence to play this music that really moves me, but that I hadn't done in that style. So really, you know, danceable New Orleans inspired, you know, sort of psychedelic soul and funk stuff is really, really fun. And it's very different from what I had done my first 15 years in Northern California.
Absolutely. And just, I mean, for the record, like I absolutely love that album. It's like, it's fantastic. I've had it on for over a week now straight. So it's right where I'm at right now. It's awesome. So.
Awesome. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you. It's really great. I really appreciate that, especially coming from you. Thanks.
It's, I mean, a lot of times, like coming at it from like a literary angle, like we tell people who just start out wanting to write, we say like, well, the best way to be a good writer is to read as much as possible, right? Like to read outside your genre to, just read. It sounds like you do the same thing, right? With, I mean, go hear classical, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, and really look for stuff that's outside what you do. So yeah, that's a great correlation with writers as well.
Because you guys are like sampling a lot and stuff as well, right? I mean, in on that album, there's some sampling. There's some like
there is some sampling. Some of the synthesizer things are sequenced parts that I worked on with Kimo Ball, and Kimo has a really great sense for picking up. For sound design and that kind of thing. I think as a keyboard player, I'm more of a traditionalist, and I tend to play Rhodes and organ and piano and clavinet or clavinet sounds and that kind of thing. Whereas I think Kimo's a little more experimental with finding tones. So I was really happy that he was open to working with me and to crafting these sounds. And then we met these DJs who were open to remixing some of our work. So Spread and Kieran and Connor Jones, who's up in Portland. Four DJs who were open to taking the source material and completely reinventing it and making them into these sort of experimental DJ creations, which
That's the remix. So that's the remixtrumentals then? Is that the
remixtrumentals, exactly.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about two things. Like the idea of one thing that's been coming up a lot as I'm doing this podcast is this idea of like sound design, you know, which is interesting. I guess I hadn't really come across it as much, but like it happens in film scores apparently. It happens in like it sounds like it's happening with you guys too in the studio. It's, you know, it's not only like the music, but it's kind of like this whole like I don't know, like sonic landscape or something like that, right? Is that, I mean,
right, and coming at it from more of a textural standpoint, mm-hmm. whereas I think my comfort zone tends to be with, you know, these are the chords and this is the progression and
yeah.
these are the instruments that are going to do them. Whereas, you know, some of these people really think at it from a pure sound standpoint. I really have a lot of respect for that. I'm trying to become more like that. And not to be as locked into the, you know, the 12 tones of the chromatic scale, like thinking more microtonally and thinking more in just terms of sonic texture and that sort of thing, rather than traditional harmony.
One thing I saw mentioned about your music is this idea of slash chords. Can you talk about, I mean, if not, it's okay. Absolutely. Can you talk about that at all?
I mean, well, I would love to talk about slash chords. I'm a huge fan of slash chords.
Talk to me.
So slash chords, and as a keyboard player, this comes up a lot where, you know, you have two hands and traditional chords, sort of more straightforward chords, what you're playing in your right hand is reflected in a bass note from your left hand that's the tonic of that same chord. So say you're playing an E7 in your right hand, you may be playing an E in your left hand, that sort of thing. Whereas a slash chord, what you're playing in your right hand does not necessarily line up with what you're playing in your left. So if you're playing an E7 chord in your right hand, in your left hand you may be playing an A or something like that. A does not live in the E7 chord, but you know, you sort of have these two tonalities living on top of each other, and it creates this cool tension. And so people who are more versed in jazz theory and jazz harmony are more familiar with this than I am. But I'm, you know, I'm working in that, into that vein of trying to get harmonies that the bass doesn't necessarily have to be in the chord that's being played by the chordal instrument, whether it's a guitar or a piano. Yes. Yeah. And it gives this kind of suspended feel sometimes where you might have, you know, you might have say a pedal tone where you've got, you know, the bass is just pedaling on an A, for example. Right. And the chordal instrument is playing, you know, an A and then a D, which has an A in it, but it's the fifth of that D, or an F where the A is the third, or a G where the A doesn't exist in it, except it was maybe the ninth, but you're not necessarily doing that. But the fact that, you know, you have that A going, you have that sort of consistent pedal going where the tonality on top of it is all shifting and isn't necessarily having anything to do with the key of A.
Right.
Yeah. So you get this, you know, cool tensions building up, and then, you know, you can either resolve them by having them agree, or you can keep them kind of at a distance from one another and speaking to each other, even though they're not in the same key necessarily.
That's awesome. I just hadn't come across that before. So that's really cool.
Yeah. A lot of my favorite writers I'm finding used a lot more slash chords than I had known before. Like Elvis Costello uses a lot of slash chords. Who else? Well, I mean, the guys in Steely Dan, you know, Donald Fagen, Walter Becker, like they have a lot of slash stuff going on.
Interesting.
I've been playing a lot of Hall & Oates recently. Yeah, I picked up a gig doing Hall & Oates music on the side, and they use a ton of slash chords because they come from that doo-wop background, and doo-wop had a lot of slash chords in the way it was arranged.
There's a video from this band of you like holding a saxophone. I know you're a multi-instrumentalist, right? So do you sometimes pick up the horns for this band as well?
I do, yeah. On the recording, we got sax players who I like better than myself. Sax players that I like their playing.
That's so smart, yeah.
Yeah, so we got Ethan Levitt, who his tone is so much nicer than my tone. And so he's sort of like what I would aspire to as a sax player. So we got him to play on there instead of me. But I do play sax. I do play some sax. And so, yeah, I will bring that out sometimes live. And you know, I definitely use that for demoing songs as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is this a tough band to play out with? I mean, just from an orchestration perspective, I mean, is it a little more like kids get to think about it a little harder? I was wondering about that. Like,
well, it's kind of loose in terms of who happens to be there on any given night. And that's one of the really inspiring things to me about working with Nate Cameron and Ted Gould, who are both from New Orleans, is that New Orleans approach to the arrangements is sort of like, well, who's there that night? You know, like, let's invite other people there. Who happens to be at the club? Who knows the stuff? Like, come on up and trust that your guests' ears are good enough that they're going to be able to keep up with whatever you're doing. They don't necessarily need to rehearse with you. They'll just hop up and they'll feel their way around. And there's a real freedom in that and a real respect for other players too, that keeps it pretty open. So, you know, if we're playing a show and there happens to be a player in the audience that we know, we'll just invite her up or invite him up to sit in on some stuff, even if they've never heard it before. That, you know, they'll find their way. It'll work.
That's cool. I mean, that probably keeps it fresh for you guys too. Just, I mean, as far as like, every night's a little different. It's got to be a little scary. I mean, even no matter how good you are, right? I mean, it's got to be a little bit tense. I mean, not tense, but
yeah. I mean, there's definitely the unknown in that, and it can be certainly, and you know, it's not always perfectly smooth at first, but that's okay. And you know, thankfully, the audiences can be pretty open to that too, and open to being surprised and you know, open to having things be a little more raw and rough at times. But then you also get these just, you know, magic moments where people that, you know, you may have even not met before come in and just add something entirely different to the sound that you love. So that, with the album that we just did, with Pacific Love, we ended up finding Jason Sloda, who I'd known 20 years earlier. We were undergrads together in Indiana. But Jason Sloda is now this amazing session drummer and touring drummer. He's in town, the Get Down, Stay Down, and he plays with John Vanderslice and all these people. And he just happened to live a block down from the studio. And we ran into him and invited him to play on the album. And he ended up laying down these incredible percussion overdubs, and he did mallets. He played xylophone and marimba on the song Pacific Love. Right. And we had no idea before arriving at the studio that day that there would be any of those elements, because we didn't know he was going to be there. He just happened to be around. And I'm so glad that worked out like that. So, yeah, the happy accidents.
Yeah,
work into it well. You know, they're the things that you plan for, and the things that you leave the structure open enough that you can have surprise guests, and you know, that you can have other people that you plug into it that bring their own flavor to it.
It's that New Orleans ethos kind of come to life, but like in real, like away from the stage in real life, right? It's like he lives down the street, so let's bring him into the studio, and then he puts down this amazing track.
Right. Lives on the street. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's that feel of that music seeping into your everyday life as well. That I've never been to Brazil, but I have a lot of friends who go down there, and then they come back and describe that experience of everyone plays. You know, whether or not people are really trained, it's just everyone can play, and you're not judging people by how well they play or not. It's just, you know, right. If you can speak, you can sing. If you can walk, you can hit, that kind of thing, where it's just, you know, everyone's welcome to it. And you could be sitting at someone's house and people will just be like playing on tables and hitting glasses with forks and that kind of thing. And that's encouraged. There isn't that much of a separation between amateur and professional and that kind of thing, which I love. You know, that's something I've always really longed for, is for more people to feel like they are musicians, because everyone's a musician.
Right.
You don't have to be making your money as a musician to be a musician.
Yeah, I remember, like, even cities have, certain cities have that. I mean, obviously New Orleans, like, the whole thing just seems to run on happy accidents, but also music. I mean, you know, like, I can remember walking down Bourbon Street during the day one time, and like there was a street musician playing House of the Rising Sun on one corner. And like just as I was like getting out of earshot of her and I crossed the street, there was another street musician on like a sitar playing House of the Rising Sun as well. And it was like this amazing transition. And I was like, this is just everywhere. You know what I mean? This is every step. It's like they've got this plan, you know what I mean? So
right. It was just in the air. Yeah.
How does San Francisco and the Bay Area, like, it's New Orleans funk and stuff? Are they pretty receptive to it? Yeah.
They're very receptive to it. And there's a real bridge between the Bay Area and New Orleans. Partly, you know, really fostered by the Boom Boom Room, which is in San Francisco. So Boom Boom Room, which is founded by John Lee Hooker, has put on a lot of shows in New Orleans, and they bring out a lot of talent from New Orleans to play in San Francisco. It's right around the corner from the Fillmore. So, you know, you'll have, you know, a show that ends at 11:30 or whatever at the Fillmore, and then right down the street, there'll be a show starting at midnight at the Boom Boom Room that, you know, a lot of the time will be players from New Orleans. So there's a real connection between those two markets. And, you know, a lot of people from the Bay Area go to New Orleans for Jazz Fest every year. Okay. And so there's a very healthy conversation that's been going along between those two cities for a long time.
I'm embarrassed to admit that I didn't know that, I guess. But yeah, that's really cool. I mean, that's just fantastic. That's fantastic.
I didn't know that for a long time either, really. I mean, I was kind of late in coming to that. Because, I mean, I'd been going to shows in San Francisco and Oakland and Berkeley for a long time. But I didn't know until, you know, just the last 5 years or so even, that there was that much of a New Orleans connection with San Francisco. And that so many of those players were coming here that weren't necessarily going to a lot of other cities.
Right. And we don't have to talk about it. I don't like to talk about the shit that I have that's not out in the world yet. But are you working on a solo? You're working on a solo project.
I am. Yeah. I have stuff that's in progress. Nice. I'm really happy with how it's coming along. And I've been doing a lot of that in San Francisco with a producer, engineer, drummer named Chris McGrew, over at Hyde Street Studios. So that's underway, and I'm happy with how the stuff's coming along. I don't know how long it's going to be before any of that sees the light of day, but I may put some of that out just as a single or a couple songs. You know, I think it's going to be a while until it's a full album, but it's coming along really well.
What genre, like, what can you describe it music? Can you describe it musically at all?
It's definitely from the melodic pop world, but tends to be kind of slower and a little gnarlier when it comes to the harmonies and that kind of thing. And, you know, since I'm a piano player, you know, there's definitely piano in a lot of it. And, you know, it's kind of a piano player's, you know, type of harmony going on with it. And the older I get, the lower my voice gets. So now I'm singing way further down in my range, so there's kind of a crooner element.
Yeah.
But
a little brandy and a cigarette, you know what I mean, and you're good to go. You know, let's spend the next hour and a half together, people.
Right.
I like that for you, though. Like, I like that career progression, man. Like,
thanks. I'm trying to think of, like, what am I going to be able to sing when I'm 80?
Right.
And I figure I'll have the low end of my voice when I'm 80. I'm not going to be able to hit the high screamy stuff. So, I'm writing more for the low end. Yeah.
As a apropos of really nothing, but, like, it's weird. It's just weird to me how, like, different singers age differently. Like, I mean, because you go to see, like, Robert Plant, he can still bring it. But then, like, we went to go see, like, Jethro Tull, and Ian Anderson had, like, a young kid singing for him during the whole concert. You know what I mean? It's just, like, is it people just take care of themselves differently, I guess? Or is that, you know, is that the...
I wonder how much of that is taking care of yourself and how much of that is writing where you're not writing at the edge of your range.
Right.
I've heard people talk about how, you know, they like writing at the very top of their range because it feels like their voice is almost giving out and there's a real emotional pull to that. but then they're not able to sustain that 20 years later. So I don't know if it's the case where, I mean, Robert Plant just has an insanely high voice.
Also,
so
yeah, a terrible example, but yeah, like, but yeah.
No, it's a great example though, because he's way up there, but he's still got that.
Got it.
So yeah, I mean, maybe it's an argument for clean living.
I would never make, I'd never be that one, you know what I mean? I'll never make that argument, you know? Alex Chilton too, I guess they did a benefit concert here. They did all those songs, and they were talking about how he did that as well. Like he would write often at the peak of his range. I never really appreciated that as like an aesthetic choice before, I guess. And I was like, that's cool. Like
I love Alex Chilton too. I'm a huge Big Star fan. So yeah. And you can hear that, like those, the delivery on the Big Star stuff especially is just so raw and so felt, and
It was just cool to understand that then suddenly as like an artistic choice, not like because when you get trained as a singer and musician, you're worried so much about like singing the perfect pitch with the tone and stuff, and then like to realize actually like when you can just break that all down and like I don't know,
right.
If it sounds cool, it works. Basically,
yeah. If it sounds cool, it works. Like if it feels right, it works. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily need to be the right pitch or even hitting the notes you intended. If it sells the song.
That's awesome. Well, hey, I'm looking forward to seeing or hearing your solo stuff whenever it comes out. So there's no pressure. Take your time.
Oh, thanks. You'll be one of the first to hear it.
Please. Cool. So then, can we just? I just want to talk a little bit about Pandora then, if you your day job or whatever, whatever it is. So.
I just had my anniversary. I've been there for 14 years now. It was the Music Genome Project when a lot of us started working on it, and there wasn't a Pandora yet. So Pandora kind of grew up to support that and to be able to make money off of it. We just got purchased by Sirius XM. Mm-hmm. So we're, in the process. Thank you. So we're kind of integrating into the Sirius XM family right now. Nice. I've been really, really fortunate to have that as my day job for these 14 years, because it's made a lot of everything else possible for me. And it's opened my ears up to hearing a lot of different sounds. So I'm a music analyst. I'm listening to new recordings every day that I'm working and answering a bunch of questions that feeds the recommendations. So yeah, a lot of people don't know that Pandora is fueled by a lot of humans with headphones, sitting and listening to every new song that gets added in. And describing those songs so that they stand a fighting chance of finding an audience that will be receptive.
I mean, I do want to say, like, I listen to Pandora, like, and my wife as well, like every day practically, So I really just wanted to bring you on here to say thank you for the last 14 years or whatever.
Well, thank you for listening.
We're loyal customers. I mean, for sure.
Well, yeah, cool. Well, yeah. I mean, that you listening is what keeps us going too. So I very much appreciate that, and I'm glad it's working. What kind of stations do you have?
Well, this is where my stress comes in a little bit, because so I used to be an XM radio subscriber like many years ago, and XM was by itself, and I listened primarily on that radio to what was kind of termed electronic jazz. This is like Thievery Corporation and like Tycho and Seven and all those bands. But when Sirius bought XM, they killed that electronic jazz station. Okay. So you couldn't listen to it anymore. Now Pandora has an amazing electronic jazz station that I listen to every day. And now Sirius just bought it. And I'm like, dudes, like basically, Kevin, can you tell me that my electronic jazz will be there?
It will be there tomorrow. It will be there. We will not do anything to touch your electronic jazz station. It is safe. It is not going anywhere. Yes.
You don't know what a relief it is to hear that,
I'm glad that I can reassure you. Yeah, it's not going anywhere. It will remain.
There's some like listener customization with Pandora, as far as like Pandora kind of learns the listener's likes and dislikes when they're playing a station. I mean, you can like a track, you can skip a little, you can dislike. So not only is like you can talk about this better than I can, but like Pandora is like learning the listener's preference, mm-hmm. as well as like trying to play music that's similar to the kinds of music you requested, right? I mean,
absolutely. And the thumbs are really crucial to how Pandora works, to how the recommendations work. So you will get much better stations if you give us some kind of feedback to the stations that you have.
Okay.
Yeah, we really learn a lot from your responses, because we can look at, you know, if you give a thumbs up on a station that you haven't responded to in a while, we can look and say, okay, whatever she or he likes about this song, let's try to bring more of that in. And it'll go to, you know, what are the differences between this song and the seed that started this station? Or what are the similarities? You know, we're sort of learning what you liked about the song that you started the station with, or what you liked about the artist that you started the station with too.
Right.
So yeah, so it's really crucial. The thumbs up and the thumbs down play into it a lot.
Nice. That's because there's always that debate, like what's the best way to like customize your own. But and I love how Pandora has, like, I was thinking about how it has this feeling of, because you can customize playlists on a lot of different platforms, or you can like listen to radio on different platforms. But the melding of it, like, there's no better high than like when you're like 45 minutes into a Pandora session and like it's like every song is just killing it. You're like, you know what I mean? Like, you're like, this is like, sometimes you really feel like you're like surfing a wave of Pandora that's like never going to end. You know what I mean?
Nice.
And
yes.
You play a part in it because you're thumbs upping and thumbs downing, but like.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're kind of responsible for that success that you've tuned a station for yourself that now is coasting along and knows your preferences better and will deal you the cards that you want to be dealt.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so
it's
great. A good
feeling. Yeah. It's awesome. You know?
Yeah. I would say one recommendation that I have personally for making stations, I have much better success when I make a station from a single song rather than an artist.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So I mix my stations up a lot, but I the better stations that I have tend to be from a song. Because a lot of the artists I like are so all over the place that the stations can be almost too varied for my liking. Whereas if I can just start from a song and then navigate from there and do the thumbs up and thumbs down, then kind of makes its own world.
That's cool. I gotta say, I don't usually start from a song. I gotta try that. I'm gonna try that out. Do you combine? You know, you can get in there and combine, like, do two different artists on one station. I mean, what's the inside baseball on that?
I do a lot of that.
Yeah.
I tend to do a good deal of that when I'm experimenting in a genre that I don't know very well. Uh-huh. If I'm getting in and I want to hear, you know, Brazilian music from the 70s or something like that, where I don't really have that much of a background in that, I'll find two artists from that and kind of pair them up together and see where that goes and kind of find the middle ground between them. But yeah, I do like having the couple of different seeds playing off of each other and then tuning in between them.
That's awesome. It's just a great way. Like you said, to be exposed to different kinds of music. You know what I mean? It's just to explore whole different like genres and dark corners of the music, You know?
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Thank you. It's a fun project to work on. I'm lucky to say that I really love my day job. So
yeah, you know,
really, really grateful for that.
Well, good luck on that. Good luck on the sale. I'm sure there'll be some transition, but like, good luck on all that stuff, you know? So no, I can't think of a better guest to close us out for season 1. So thank you. Thank you very much. So,
cheers. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And that's our show. And that is in fact our season. End of season 1. Thank you so much for listening. Follow us on Twitter, A440Pod, Facebook, A440Pod, or shoot us an email. Let us know what you think. A440Pod@gmail.com. And our website, of course, a440pod.com. Hey, have a terrific spring. Enjoy the summer. We will circle back sometime in the fall. Keep an eye out. Keep an ear to the ground. Let's jam again soon.